And we're live.
Hello. Welcome all. It is a very special afternoon edition, Wednesday afternoon edition of Generational Change. I'm Jen.
I'm Peter, and I'm overdressed.
You're very dressed. But then at least you gave me the heads up. But I think Yes. It's kind of funny when we're mismatched.
No, that's okay. I don't think we're that mismatched. I think
well, not now.
I think I look like I'm going to a
meeting. No, I mean when one of us is in a t-shirt and one of us is not.
Well, that's okay. But this is a special afternoon edition because we are having two wonderful guests coming on today. One who happens to be from my native land.
Don't do it with the accent.
I'm not going to do it.
Don't do it.
We'll see how.
Don't do it.
We'll see.
You sound like the leprechaun from Lucky Charms. That's what you sound like. And it is not good.
Or I could sound like
no!
a movie.
Please don't do that. So anyway, the first person we're talking to, which is really why we're doing it in the afternoon, because this is always the thing when we have people on that are in that time zone. But Melissa Jukin, I think that's how you pronounce it.
Yes.
I think so. Is in Ireland, and she is a conservationist and a goat herder. And I saw this whole article about this a while back about using goats to help prevent wildfires. And I just thought, you know, that might be something that we should incorporate here. You know, given that while I was reading this, I think California was being evacuated.
You know,
and this isn't a Florida thing. Like, so this is not something we often talk about. That's like the last thing. It's the only thing in Florida we don't ever worry about are wildfires. Like, that's not our concern.
But even still, if you're, you know, the biggest reason why this has become such a problem, probably more than any other reason, is because of the droughts. When you add the drought factor in, this just becomes even worse. But remember,
we're having floods. You're having droughts.
Yeah. Remember, climate change is just a myth. It's not real. It's just in your mind. And yeah,
it's sort of like leftist voodoo.
But if goats can actually help us, then that's a great thing.
I have a very strange thing with goats. Like, I very much respect them, but I find them very odd. I find them odd. And I think a lot of it has to do with their eyes. And they don't creep me out or anything. They don't creep me out. But, you know, like, I feel like I have very healthy respect for the goat. And I just, the only thing that irritates me is whenever they've been chewing at my shoelaces. That seems to be a thing.
There's also goat yoga.
That is the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
It's pretty popular.
You know what? Here's the thing. I don't care how much, like, I would like an animal. Even my dogs, I don't want to do yoga with them. That's annoying.
Come on, connection. Get better. Well, we'll hope for the best.
We're going to hope for the best.
She is a goat herder and conservationist from Ireland. Welcome, Melissa Jukin, to Generational Change.
Hello. Lovely to be here. Thank you.
Hi. So I'm sure you know the article that I'm referring to, or group of articles that came out around the same time. It was, I want to say, like in October-ish.
It was early September, I think.
Okay. And, you know, I found that very interesting. So, but before we even get into that, talk a little bit about the particular goats. Because I know there's something special about not your personal goats, but this particular species of goat. So if you like, talk about that, because it's really cool. And I wish we were high tech, I'd put up a picture.
Yeah. So the goats that we are working with here in Dublin is the Old Irish Goat. They're Ireland's native breed of goats. They're part of our heritage. They would have been introduced to Ireland about 5,000 years ago when they came with the Neolithic people. And a goat, they're known as poor man's cow. They've seen plenty of people through hard times. They're a hardy type of animal, and they can put up with a lot, and they can thrive on poor quality forage. So we're working with a primitive breed of the Old Irish Goat. It's actually critically endangered here in Ireland, and it's the only goat in Ireland that's native to us. So we're also working to conserve them, and in return, they're also working with us to conserve the landscape and the habitat.
Yeah, I love that. The symbiosis is really, really cool to me, because I think that really is the answer to a lot of our environmental problems, is sort of working symbiotically with the universe. I think this as far as like agriculture and all sorts of stuff. But is this goat trait about being comfortable eating, like, you know, dead foliage, right? Or whatever, is that all goats? Is that this particular species? Like, is this something that could organically be employed somewhere else? you know, that we don't have obviously indigenous old Irish goats in California.
Yes. So like you're saying, we are trying to make the animal match the environment. So it's a symbiotic relationship in that sense. In terms of the habitats that we have here, the heathland, it's poor quality forage. It's mainly gorse. So gorse as a plant has really sharp needles. It's really prickly. Goat would happily graze on it. Horses would nibble a bit, but that's about it. Sheep might nibble a little bit. So we are using a primitive breed of goat. So the old Irish goat is a primitive breed. They have a wider grazing palate. So their interest is more for poor quality woody scrubs instead of the lush grass. In terms of their productive kind of thresholds, they're also not pushed for production. So they're not a meat breed or a dairy breed. So in return, they can thrive on poor quality forage, and it's what they prefer. So this animal is happy to stay in this habitat and thrive in this habitat, where a more modern breed would not be able to thrive.
Right. So that's really interesting. So it's not just, and I figured as much, which is why I wanted to talk to you about this, because I was thinking, oh, just have them take a bunch of goats and let them roam wild in California and that'll solve their problems. But it gets me thinking that there probably is some indigenous species, something that would also be able to thrive on that. Like we're not seeking organic answers. That's what this sounds like to me. Like we could be seeking more organic answers.
Sure. I would say it's probably very relatable to, you know, the way that we take care of our bodies, for example. You know, a healthy diet, exercise, lifestyle, all those things are interrelatable to nature providing us with the answers rather than looking for some grandiose type solution to nature's problems.
Well, right. Well, but here, like what we have, it's probably the same in Ireland, like the agricultural takeover of big agra is a constant battle. Do you have that there where like your small farmers are dwindling, your big agra is making like monocultures that's destroying the earth, and it's just controlled by a small group of people? Do you guys have that kind of system there?
It would play a part as well here in Ireland. I suppose we are quite lucky in the country. If you look at the landscape of the country, so the eastern side of the country has better land, good land, so you would meet bigger farmers. Ireland is still very strong in the dairy sector and grass-fed beef and dairy cows. So all in all, it's all very much a natural system. And then if you were to look up and down the west coast, it's quite difficult terrain, marginal land, very small roads and access. And that's where your small Irish farmer still thrives. I suppose they're committed to the task at hand, and they still have a place and a role to play in the farming community here in Ireland, which is great, because the land would just be too difficult to manage on a large scale.
I would love to see that. That's where I want to go there. Yeah. That's where I want to go. Well, I want to go a lot of places, but what has been your success with your efforts in bringing back this species? Like when did this start? And, you know, what are your numbers? Like, have you been having a good success with, I wouldn't want to say breeding them, but, you know, like how have you been doing that to get this particular species?
So it all started in Mayo, in a village in Morani in Mayo. So a group of volunteers captured some of the wild goats. So in Ireland, there are still feral herds of goats. They would have been part of the farming setup in the past, but over time have been released and let go feral. Okay. So, and with that, modern breeds have also been introduced and released. So there's inbreeding going on there. A community in Mayo, they captured some of the original old Irish type of goat in the Mulrani Hills and started a breeding program in 2015. They did a DNA sampling just to confirm the genetics, and they've done an awful lot of work with that. So as of today, we're still at really small and low levels. So the Domestic Animal Diversity Information System, it's basically a database of breed-related information, and we are still registered as critical. So for us to be registered as critical, your breeding females is less than 100, or breeding males is less than 5. As of today, we have about 95 animals registered. These are animals that are tagged and accounted for and have been DNA sampled. the breeding program that started in 2015 has been ongoing. So we are actually nearly finished kidding here. The herd, there's actually, I think there's about 7 satellite herds in the country, ranging from about 20 breeding females to 2 or 3, depending on the area. And the satellite herds are also set up for biosecurity reasons, just so that we have the animals spread out at different sites if we were to get stuck with a disease outbreak or anything. So numbers are still very small, but we're building on it. And like that, all animals are tagged and DNA sampled and assessed on a phenotypic and genotypic analysis. And we're hoping to get them a rare breed status in the country. And that will offer them protection.
They graze wild, though, is what you're saying. Like they graze wild. And you, does that ever like concern you as far as the inbreeding with or mixed breeding with the ones that are not that? Like, I mean, how can you control that?
So in the country, there are still feral breeds, feral herds of goats. So for that reason, like you mentioned, the inbreeding is something that's going on every year and only gets the gene pool only gets more and more diluted. So like that, the sooner and the quicker we can capture some of the good specimens of the wild goats and introduce them to the breeding program, and with that, continue the progress of the breeding program, that's the only way to save the species and protect the gene pool.
Right. Right. That's really interesting. So you collect them so that they can breed amongst themselves and then they still get to go and propagate in the wild.
Well, at the moment, so any animal that's in the breeding program, we can account for them. They are registered, they're tagged, they are protected in that sense. Whereas the feral herds have no protective status. They don't fall under the Wildlife Act. So they can be exposed to hunting and things like that. So there's no protective status on the feral herds. And for us, our main intention is to make sure that the good quality goats of the old Irish breed don't disappear before we have a chance to save the gene pool. So anyone that's in the breeding program has the good life, I suppose. And with that, we build on it. So we build on the animals in the breeding program, and we also keep an eye out for specimens in the feral herds and see if we can capture the good specimens and introduce them to the breeding program.
We're speaking with Melissa Dukin, who is a goat herder and conservationist from Dublin, Ireland. How have you seen climate change in your country? What has been some of the things that you've noticed? I mean, obviously, we see how bad the wildfires are in California, and it's certainly one of many issues that we're seeing on the regular. Sea level rise is a nightmare here in South Florida. What are some of the things that you're experiencing in your neck of the woods?
So Ireland might have a reputation, like it's a green country, has a bit of a reputation for rainy days, but those rainy days are getting less and less. We are getting warmer and wetter winters and warmer and drier summers. So this is where it ties into us working with the goats. So their base is in Mayo, Mulroney, their breeding program, but they have now a group of them, a herd of 25, got a job in Howth. As conservation grazers. So Howth is a little suburb adjoining Dublin City, which is the capital in Ireland. It's only 14 kilometres from the city centre. It's a peninsula surrounded by the sea, but yet it's a very dry heathland, and it is at risk of wildfires, and these fires are increasing as we get warmer and drier summers. We actually had our first wildfire only 2 days ago, which is very early for the fire season, as they call it. That to me is still a whole new concept. I did not think Ireland would be dealing with fire seasons in that sense, as paramount as it is now. So the goats have a job here as conservation grazers. That's their new job. They started that here in September, and it's a 3-year pilot program. And with that, we are increasing the numbers to make sure that they can do the job well. The site itself, it's about 10 kilometers squared. Howth itself, it's a suburban place. There's a lot of people living here. It's also a destination. So being so close to the capital city, a lot of people like to come visit here. So with that influx of extra people, there's also more risk of fires just from littering or antisocial behavior or cigarette butts or barbecues. Yeah. So there's a big impact on the fact that it's become a more popular place as well.
How do you find your government is in terms of its response to climate crisis and things that it's supportive of? Like, do you feel like, I mean, I think of it all like sticks and carrots to some extent, like, and in this country, we generally tend to reward bad behavior and not the good behavior. And we don't incentivize the right things. Like right now we're taking away our reason in Florida to have solar. They're actually they're disincentivizing solar, which is ridiculous because we're the sunshine state. So how do you feel like in Ireland that your government handles this kind of, you know, like, are they subsidizing the right industries? Are they taking the right, you know, course of action? And what are they doing to address this?
So in terms of the project here in Howth, I'm working with the Old Irish Goat Society that's based in Mayo, but then we're also collaborating with Fingal County Council, which would be the local county council responsible for this area. And they have taken the initiative to look at alternative ways to manage the habitat and the environment here. And they've looked at projects in Spain where they use goats for fire prevention grazing. And like that, they are open and willing to look at alternative kind of environmentally friendly systems to combat this problem. So instead of going in, previously they have gone in with mechanical means to create fire breaks or sprays, herbicides to control growth. But now they're looking at how to put in place a long-term plan that's a lot more environmentally friendly. It's sustainable. It makes ecological sense. And it's a lovely addition to the landscape here, and especially with its proximity to the city. So it's an eye opener for the local people and the city people as well. So they're taking that new initiative in that sense, and it's a pioneering project.
That's amazing. And I'm just trying to wrap my head around it from like our perspective. Is this something that would be happening at a state level, or is it almost sounds like local? But like at every level that we have here, there are so many barriers to being able to do something like that. You know, like I'm very envious. Do you not see like what we're dealing with? We just had a local election here where the two people that were fighting to investigate why a building fell into an ocean lost their seats on the city commission to big developers that want to basically turn our entire coast into a giant wall of buildings of concrete. And yet they're facilitating this entire organic approach to addressing climate crisis.
Well, they say that you can't just introduce a new species into an environment that's not native to it.
But no, yeah.
Would there be a way potentially to introduce these goats to parts of California that could probably benefit from sort of a pilot test to see if something like this would ultimately be effective?
Yeah. And like that, it doesn't have to be the Old Irish goat. It's whatever goat is most suited to the Californian climate. And it being a warmer place, you're probably looking at a more long-eared goat, like a Nubian or the Boer. And they're more suited to those climate conditions. Yeah.
That's really, how did you get into this? How did you get into, you know, doing goat herding? I mean, obviously, you know a lot about the environmental impact of it. So, I mean, you seem to come at this from a more of a scientific perspective versus, you know, growing up on a goat farm.
Well, it's great that I bring that message across, but it is the fact that I grew up on the goat farm and that I'm kind of self-trained in my trade in some way. So like that, this is a whole new concept, even for Ireland and for Dublin. They advertised for the job of a goat herder, and I did not think they would ever advertise that there ever be an option to get a job as a goat herder in the country. I grew up on a family farm in the west of the country, but with that, I kept goats and learned my tricks of the trade in the burn, walking around with my own herd. So. And have been a goat farmer for many years, a dairy goat farmer mainly. Apart from that, I did study veterinary nursing, so I was a vet nurse. And then this job came available, and I just thought, oh my God, how are they going to put goats into Dublin, close to Dublin? So, but when I came to look at the site here, Howth itself, it's beautiful. It has the elevated rocky climbs, the heathland, the scrub, no green fields. So this is ideal goat country.
So your goats are happy. Like these are happy goats, right? Like they're doing, they're living their best lives. And so when you do dairy, and this is something that freaks me out about the dairy industry here, like we see videos of cow gives birth, baby is taken away, mother of cow is like running around crying for her baby, and that's the cow that's producing our milk. And like, that just freaks me out. So I would suspect that that's not how you do things.
No. So my system, like that, everything has its place. Nature has its place and has reasons for it. So work with it, not against it. So these goats that I'm working with now, they will be rearing their own kids for 6-7 months. And they will be weaned naturally as they join the herd and numbers increase. Their job, male or female, is as a conservation grazer here in Howth. And in return for the linked up to the breeding program, the females will be part of the breeding program. And the males, if they become a stud sire, great. If they don't, they're still a conservation grazer. So they all have a role to play. My own history with my own goats, like that, they would have had their kids. They would have reared their kids for 3 months. Once their kids were reared, they'd done their job. Then they'd milk for my own business side in that sense. So like that, it's not all year round supply, but you work with the best and you give everyone right. their share.
That's so nice.
So it sounds like you treat animals humanely for the most part in your country. Well, that's nice.
I'm sure. Look, there's got to be industrial stuff there too. Okay. I mean, there's got to be industrial stuff there. There is. There's profit to be made in it, but it's nice that this is being supported.
I want to ask you a question, Melissa, that's off topic, if that's okay. It is somewhat politically related.
Okay, as long as it's not sports.
No, it's not sports. Okay. But I am sure she's a big fan of football. So.
Yeah, no, they play football or rugby.
No, football as in their feet. Real
no,
football.
I know what you mean is soccer. No, I know that, but like that's not badass like rugby.
Well, rugby's pretty rough and tough. That's what I'm Melissa, are you a sports fan? Let's just get that out of the way.
I could watch a game. Yeah.
There you go.
Okay, but go back to what you were. Is that we weren't into politics.
So one of the biggest problems we have here in the States is how our media covers things. One of the things that was very noteworthy at the time, Ireland, of course, has universal health care, education, and a living wage. So one of the things that was interesting when Prince Harry and Meghan Markle did their, I guess, what you would call sit down with Oprah, many people from the UK were aghast at seeing how many pharmaceutical commercials we have here in the United States.
Yeah.
The fact that we have a for-profit healthcare system, which is obviously a joke to people in Europe. One of the things that is also very interesting is how we cover foreign conflicts. Now, of course, our country can't get enough of what's going on in Ukraine right now, feeling that it's all about how do we gin up more support for more conflict. I am curious whether it is Al Jazeera, BBC, what is it that the Irish typically get their news from? And do you find that it's fairly even-handed regarding, you know, whether it is foreign conflicts or any general news regarding politics?
Quite the question.
I had to ask it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the BBC, RTE, local stations would broadcast their own share, Sky News, this and that. So it kind of depends on what people kind of venture into, what channels and what they follow. So everybody has their different agenda and they broadcast that. But it depends on what you're looking for, I think, as to what you'll find or what media story you'll follow.
Yeah, I'm just curious what's the perception of the United States over there right now? Like, what do you think the perception? Like, I'm always very like, I actually would like to know how we're perceived by just regular people in other countries, because I think we look like assholes.
I might not be the right person to ask. I'm not a big media follower, to be honest. I'm not one to watch the news or tune into those things where I can avoid it. I'm aware of what's going on, but I'm actually not the biggest follower. So I wouldn't want to be too judgmental on it either.
Yeah. No, that's great. And obviously that is what has certainly engulfed our culture in a way that I think has obviously been very negative. And so certainly when it comes to the environmental movement, there is a lot of interest in the States, especially with younger generations. And I think people overall recognize that it's a very serious circumstance and we need to be finding solutions to the problem. We're not a very active culture. America has a tendency to only get their butts in gear when ish hits the fan, as I like to say. We're in the business of solving problems, not preventing them. But I'd like to think that what you're offering is a wonderful idea because it isn't expensive in any way, shape, or form. It obviously requires, you know, farming but and tending to goats, of course. But that's nothing when you're talking about the billions upon billions of dollars that can be saved economically by tending to this major issue, which is wildfires.
Yes.
It is a big problem.
Yep.
And I would think after what happened in the outback in Australia, that would have been enough to sort of, you know, set everything in motion
that
we really have to do something now. And of course, we're not doing anything right now. Yep. But if we can bring your idea greater attention, and more people will look at this and say, yeah, you know what? That's not such a bad idea. And if that's going to stop the fires, which is going to be great for the environment and great for the economy, it's a win-win situation all the way around. Do you know of anybody currently stateside here in our country that is practicing this type of thing? Is that even something you're aware of as of now?
Yes, it's like it is something that I would have looked into when I was researching for this job, that there is mobile grazers, I think that's what you call them, herders or people with goats that rent out their livestock or their animals to offer a grazing service. They bring them to site, they manage them, they negotiate a plan in terms of the site that has to be grazed, whether it's along motorways or private land, how much vegetation is there, how many animals are required in terms of stocking density or what timeline is required. So there is people running such little private businesses in the States providing a mobile grazing service. And like that, it's something that we're hoping to be able to show here as well and expand on and take it countrywide, whether it's in national parks or for a private service. It's something that I think a lot of people would be interested in to hire biological management team to deal with their, whether it's their back garden or overgrown wasteland or the national parks or the environment. So it's definitely something that is, there is interest there and there's hunger for it in that sense.
One final question, which I think is very, very important, is how much space do you need per goat? How much space does each goat cover? So if you had,
how many acres do you
if you have like a terrain that you want to cover and make sure that the brush is being attended to properly, how much does each goat cover?
So that's very selective to site. It's actually something we're gathering data on at the moment to be able to actually deal out those figures. So here we're mainly targeting firebreaks. So like that, we want to graze them whether it's two or three times a year to a certain height, we know that we'll be able to calculate and know, okay, we need 50 goats on this site for a week. Or maybe you want a more sustainable approach that you just want a little herd present on the different site that just manages it. So it's data that we are gathering and hoping to have by the end of this project. So that like that, if somebody approaches us with any type of site or scenario, we can say, this is what you need. And we'll take it from there.
That's amazing. So yeah, it's, you're looking at like average what they're doing and what their patterns are, and then you determine it's most likely what they're going to do. That's amazing. Like it's common sense, but it's amazing. And I think it's like when you plan, I'm thinking of it, like if I were having landscapers come to my house, the person needs to know exactly what you need done. And then they know exactly how many man hours they need to trim all the trees and all the grass. Right. And that's what I'm picturing with like, all right, we're going to send in the team. And I'm picturing the goats in little landscaper hats. It's just really funny.
They do all have a name. So we do have a crew. Like, it's not like they're just a...
You do? Really?
Yeah. Everybody that's has amazing. A name. Yeah. Yeah, they got to do it. You're workmates.
Well, the picture I had of you with them, it's very clear that you love your animals. Like, it's very clear that you love them and that it's very, like, something that you care about. It's not just a job.
No, true, but it has to be real as well. So like that, the old Irish goat, any primitive breed, they're a bit more shy or anxious. So like that, if you have to take them to a site or do anything with them, they need to trust you. It needs to be real. It can't be for show. So like that, you have to build a bond. And with that, you work as a team.
So how many goats do you have? Like, how many goats are you overseeing that you personally know? Because if you're naming them, these are like, it's like, it, instead of a pack, it's a herd. I get that. But how many goats are you like with?
So for the project, demanded 25 goats. So we started here with 25 in September, all females. So they were mixed between 14 adult females and 13 teenagers or female kids from the spring. So now we have gone into, there was two males here for the breeding season, but the 13 goats are kidding at the moment. There's 12 kids on the ground at the moment. There's three more to kid, and the 12 teenagers are here as well. So the numbers are growing. For the first year, we had 25 as a quota. For year two, we're looking at 50. And from there, wow, Hoping to go to 100.
Okay, but when you get to 100, do you think you'll know them all? Do you think you'll know all their names? Will you be able to keep track of that? I wonder this with people that have more than five kids. Like, would you? You think you'll get that though? 100? You think you'll be all right? When you get to 100 goats, will you come back?
I will.
I'm going to have you come back and name them.
No problem. You can quiz me on them. I'll give you 100 pictures and you can quiz me on them.
That's very impressive.
I love that. That would be me with like dogs. I would have like a farm. I would have, unfortunately, dogs aren't eating brush. They cost a lot of money to feed and it's not the same scenario, but I would live with like 100 dogs. That would be me.
I would too.
Be like the dog lady.
Yeah, no, I think anytime that you can, and that's one thing that is very popular in the States, Melissa. People do love animals, especially, you know, friendly animals, you know, goats, cats, dogs, things like that. And I could definitely see, you know, scenarios where people in California in particular could set up like, you know, the goat farms and you could do goat yoga there and things like that. Oh, and by the way, we're also going to be tending to the brush. So, you know, there's so many endless possibilities in terms of what could be accomplished by doing this. But as we say, you know, so much of the issues with nature require nature solutions. And this is a nature solution that is very environmentally friendly, very cost efficient. And hell, who wouldn't want to play with goats? I mean, come on, it's a win-win all the way around. If there's anything that you're working on that you would like to plug, if you have a website.
Yeah, can people support this in some way? I mean, I know it's not like, you know, you're not doing a fundraiser or anything, but is there a way people can learn more about this or see what you're up to?
You can follow us, the Old Irish Goat Society on Instagram or Facebook. I myself am the Irish Goat Herder. Sorry, now.
Irish Goat Herder.
Yeah. And like you were saying there, just to say as well, like that, it needs community support. So it's really nice. We're doing a little naming competition for the kids as well, but it's the fact that there's community support, community buy-in. That's where your success comes from, and people are invested in the program. They're invested in the animals. They're aware they're doing a job for them and the community as well. So that's really nice. Like, it's really genuine. And then there's another, something I'd like to highlight. Like I said, the feral herds, they don't fall under the protection of the Wildlife Act. So like that, there's a petition going at the moment to ban the trophy hunting of the feral goats. So that's a petition on change.org to ban the hunting of the old Irish goat. So that's something I'd like to raise.
Why would anybody be hunting goats? Like,
first of all, people hunt to hunt, but goats are usable meat. I mean, I'm not supporting it. I'm just saying, why would they hunt? They hunt because they hunt.
Yeah, for this this particular exercise, it's mainly for trophy hunting. It's looking for the biggest goat with the biggest horns.
That's what I thought.
Like that, the old Irish goat, they have they're quite a colorful animal, long-haired, big horns. So it's just for size, really, more so than the use.
Is that like elephant hunting? Or is it ivory horns? Okay, well, obviously, get it. At least you're in Ireland. Forget it. If you were in like South Africa, God knows what the hell.
Well, they're not ivory, but they like it for their heads and their horns.
I just said that there's value in the horns. It's no different than ivory in the tusks of
elephants. This is just
people
that like to shoot things. Oh, yeah. I've never understood people that want to shoot things other than to eat them.
Well, you're not a sociopath.
No, I'm not.
So there's a difference. there is a classification of people who just have absolutely no empathy whatsoever for animals, especially, which, again, I don't want to know people like that. But no. You said it in a very quick Irish accent. So unfortunately,
don't do that.
You're going to have to say it again. So what is the Instagram one more time?
Irish Goat Herder or the Old Irish Goat Society.
Irish Goat Herder. And the other one is
Old Irish Goat Society.
Old Irish Goat.
And then the petition is on change.org.
Thank you so much for that.
Thank you very much for having me.
And, of course, please forgive him sounding like the guy from Lucky Charms.
My Irish accent's not that
bad. It's terrible.
No, it's not. I happen to like Melissa's accent.
Oh, for God's sake.
Mine's a mix between Irish and Dutch, so
there you go.
It's not a true Irish accent.
It's not, your accent is not what I typically think of when I think of Irish accent.
I may have been born in Holland, but grew up in Ireland. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
There you go. That's great. I gotta get to Ireland one of these days.
Please do.
My roots go back to the 14th century, so I've been.
We have a journalist friend, Josh Hamilton. Are you familiar with him at all?
Yeah.
He's been on our show a couple times. He's a really good journalist over there in Ireland. So I like to have him on. Thank you so much, Melissa, for coming on and talking about this.
Yeah,
with us.
It really means a lot.
I
really appreciate what you're doing. Guys, if you can, please check out Irish Goat Herder again. Irish Goat Herder and Old Irish Goat Society on Twitter and Instagram. They can definitely use your support. This is definitely
like
something.
Them. Share them.
Especially for those who are really concerned about where the environment on this planet is going right now. Lord knows we could certainly use some really innovative therapy to helping heal the planet. This would definitely be one of the great ones. Melissa Jukin, thank you so much. We will definitely be in touch.
Thank you. I'll be in touch when I get to 100.
Thank you.
Sounds good.
Bye.
Have a good one. Well, she was great.
She was lovely.
And of course,
and it sounds so much better when I'm talking about somebody that's over in that part of the world.
Well, they have basic necessities in society.
I can't believe you did the Irish accent with her.
What is wrong with doing the Irish accent?
Stop! It's terrible.
It isn't.
It is. It's terrible.
No, actually, it isn't.
It is. It's terrible.
Why do you say that?
Because it sounds like the guy from Lucky Charms. Oh. They're magically delicious.
They're magically delicious. Red balloons, yellow stars. Rainbows.
See, when you're saying that, now you sound like Apu or somebody like that. While you're saying that, you sound like a guy. Quickie Mart.
Blue horseshoes. Is it blue horseshoes? Is that what they had? Purple horseshoes? Blue diamonds.
Oh, my God.
And blue diamonds.
I was not allowed to eat that. So no, it wasn't a thing that was allowed for me.
That's trash food.
I think I made a mistake with the dog groomers. They were supposed to come at 3. She said, can I come earlier today? She wanted to come at 1:30. I'm like, I can't do 1:30. I could do between 1:45 and 2.
Okay. Well, we need to get this figured out right now because our connection is terrible.
I know, but I don't know that there's any way. I don't know how to fix it. And I'm not. And I think that if we initiate that, we could end up in a worse way. Better is the enemy of good.
Okay. Well,
because
if Jason says not great, then that means that it's definitely bad.
So then how, well, then resetting it doesn't necessarily make it better.
Well, we have to figure out right now if that is going to do the trick. So bear with us, guys. We'll figure out in a minute.
Apparently we're having technical difficulties. I'm having happy hour.
We have to figure that out.
Which is ironic because it's the middle of the day, but you know, I'm used to doing this at night. So that's why I wasn't entirely sure you were going to do live, that you didn't want to just record and then play it later.
No, definitely wanted to do it live because of Mr. Pulte will be coming on at 1:00.
Oh, you know what we could talk about that was good news? I at least think of as good news was what we did on Sunday. And what's going on down there is that a Starbucks in Hialeah is unionizing and working to unionize, and they're doing a really good job. Now, this was thought of as a very difficult thing to achieve because people who don't realize Hialeah is extremely old school, red, Latino, predominantly Cuban, and conservative. And so this was not the Starbucks that anybody thought. And yet they're doing really well in terms of winning people over. And it's seemingly good right now, but we don't want to get our hopes up until we can actually get through a vote because management will do absolutely everything it can do to squash this. And that's a problem. So we're working on that. I'm very pleased to announce they did have a meeting yesterday that went well. And so that's good. And they're also looking to unionize in Miami Springs Starbucks. So we have two Starbucks down here that...
Hang on one sec. Guys, bear with us.
We're taking a break for
We'll do it live. Yes. That's one of the great. That's one of the greatest things ever.
We'll be back live in a minute, but we need to take care of some technical issues.
Hey, Seuss, by the way, if you haven't, I know you just got here. If you haven't seen the interview so far with Melissa, please check it out, because as a California resident, yes, I think you would find this very interesting.
Yes.
And definitely want to spread the word. It's very, very important.
I love any chance we get, or I get to talk to people that are part of like organic solutions to climate problems. I think it's so important.
Yep.
All right. I think, guys, we're going to go and then come back.
Hold that for a second. I just moved the transmitter. Someone put it behind the window cell. So let's see if it's.
But it's still looking like we're low here.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's been constant for over 40 minutes the entire time. So hang on
one second, guys. We're going to go. We are. And what time is our interview for sure? With
1 o'clock.
At 1 o'clock. We will be on somewhere between now and one.
So hang tight.
Making sure that you didn't think.
All right. So I think we're okay now.
I think we're good.
Cross our fingers. Guys, give us a thumbs up in the chat. Not for Jen's pot hit, but for, can you give us a thumbs up?
What's wrong?
The connection is bad again. All right. So we're definitely going to reset this thing. All right. Hang on a second, guys. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
Also, you have to either, I have nothing to talk about.
All right. So I think our connection is good. Guy, give us a thumbs up if we're looking okay.
It is what it is, guys. I think it's the time of day, and
we reset our router. So hopefully that
honestly, I don't have any. I think it's the time of day.
Maybe it is. Yeah, we did the best we could.
Yeah.
I have to say, the Kabuki Theater of the judicial confirmation to the Supreme Court of Ketanji
Jackson Brown or Brown Jackson?
Brown Jackson.
Okay.
Is such
Jackson Brown.
Good music. But such BS. It's such a waste of time. And the truth is, what do you need? You need 51 votes?
I think so.
Yeah. Okay.
But
so here's the thing that everybody's so up in arms about. Yes, there's going to be race baiting. There's going to be all of this stupid crap.
Yeah.
Stop getting distracted by it.
Yeah.
Everybody is oh my God, did you hear what they said? Here's what I do know. I know that this lady who has been nominated to the Supreme Court is not a complete corporate hack. And that is why they are doing everything that they can to try to get her knocked off. And why is that? Because there is another black woman in South Carolina who is a corporate hack, who Lindsey Graham and a handful of other GOPers and, frankly, a lot of the corporate Democrats really wanted. What the motivation is to having Jackson instead of the other lady...
I don't know. I have some thoughts on this.
I mean, I don't trust President Biden as far as I could throw him when it comes to corporate special interests. I don't think anybody else does. But in this case, we really have to ask, why are people still falling for this is a week-long, attention-grabbing type circumstance? They're going to bleed it for all it's worth. They are going to bring as much attention and as much ratings as they can get out of it.
Can I say something about... You say ratings. It has been brought to my attention that Tucker Carlson is obsessed with getting her LSAT score. And I don't know what that's about or what that is or what group of people that's feeding into that.
Who could possibly
my friend Bo, not my friend, Bo of the Fifth Column did an episode about this. But here's the thing, people, the LSAT. It had to be, this is what is so funny. He's worried about her LSAT score. It was good enough to get her into Harvard Law School, which by definition means it's a minimum of like, back when I was getting into law school, it was like a 172 just to even get in. I know they've changed the numbers now, but it was insane just to even be considered. And then she graduated cum laude from Harvard Law School. Bo did a good video on this, guys. You should check it out. It's just hilarious to me. And she is not just qualified. She is actually the most well-rounded and like person that would be on the court if she were to get appointed at this moment. She would be the most qualified person on the Supreme Court if she were. And it's so interesting to me. Amy Coney Island did not know what five rights are in the First Amendment. She didn't know.
Or
like this is a woman, or has she ever tried a case? Same as Kavanaugh. Never tried a case.
You have two Supreme Court justices who never tried a case.
Never tried. Well, it's disgusting to me, the whole thing. And yet here is somebody that would be the first person. And you know what? Technically, Thurgood wasn't a criminal attorney, but he did do cases involving like criminal defense. So I'm not going to say she's the first person to ever do criminal defense to sit on the court, but in a long time. And definitely somebody who's litigated and fought for justice and spoke up for detainees at Guantanamo. This is the right kind of people. So I find it hilarious that her LSAT score.
Why doesn't she have an LSAT score?
No, she does. I'm sure she does.
We are trying to get to the bottom of those people.
It's very important. He's making it be like Obama's birth certificate. But the thing is that let's say she had a really crappy LSAT score. Let's say she did. Let's say it was horrible. And let's say she got in because even though she had a crappy LSAT score, everything else about her was so good. So they wanted her in their law school. Let's say that's the case. All right. So Like, I don't understand what that matters.
The GOP fights to the death on whatever issue is at hand. And that's how they operate. And unfortunately, it's good for TV and people want to talk about it and they have nothing else to talk. Well, no, actually, they have a lot to talk about. They could, you know, talk about issues like healthcare and the environment and how do we end this mess in Ukraine and, you know, but no, I mean, this is a, you know, let's just talk more and more about how we're a racially divided country in some ways still.
Let me explain we're going into where seriously Roe versus Wade is going to be up. It is. Mm. It's going to be up and it's going to be, this is one of the people that I want in there when that happens.
Sure.
That's how I feel. So,
and
you know,
you would think that somebody like that will defend it.
Oh, I have no doubt she would.
So that's a big
deal. That is important. It is a big deal.
And you can tell, listen, I have no love.
That gives us three
for,
women.
Yeah, I have no love for the Democrats in comparison to the GOP. But if there is any comparison when it comes to judicial appointments in the last several years, particularly regarding who was appointed during the Obama administration versus the Trump administration, and even more so now in the Biden administration, which frankly isn't nominating any judges. What a shock.
Because Trump filled all the vacancies.
Yeah, and a lot of Michelle Childs, Mario. Thank you. Yes, that's the lady. Michelle Childs is a corporate hack from South Carolina, and that's who Mr. Lindsey Graham wants. Because it's what Lindsey Graham wants is what matters. So ultimately, when it comes to judicial appointments, as we've seen over the last several years, the GOP does not take this seriously. What they want are not only complete corporate hacks, but also people who adhere to the evangelical right. So when you put those two things together, you get people who sit on the court like Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett. That's where we are. And so when we look at the Democratic side, we get people who are not connected to the evangelical right. They're just connected to Wall Street. And when you finally have a judicial nominee, and rest in peace, but Ms. Bader Ginsburg was very, very close at Wall Street. And her record reflects that. But this lady, this lovely lady, Mrs. Jackson, does not appear to be somebody who is knee-deep in Wall Street nonsense regarding what's good for the criminal justice system and isn't. Here is somebody who is known for reducing nonviolent drug offender sentences or commuting them outright. There's never been a public defender who's been on the court, and she'd be the first. Oh, and by the way, she's a Black woman who would be the first. You know what? The fact that I can go through four or five things before I get to the fact that she's
right.
a Black woman.
That's the thing.
Like, that's what matters.
I'm sitting here and thinking about her defending detainees in Guantanamo, and that's really the thing. This actually, based on what I see for what right now, this is the best nominee to the Supreme Court I have seen, maybe in my lifetime, potentially. So the fact that, and I'm not watching the hearings. I don't want to, because it'll just aggravate me and I'll just see the bunch of nonsense and it's not real and it's just frustrating. And they can't go after her on qualifications. So they're going to go after her on whatever nonsense they're going to go after her on. And I just don't.
It's true, guy. Because unfortunately, now everything has become hyper-partisan. It's not even partisan anymore.
Yeah, Kavanaugh. Hyper-partisan. It should have been, because he's a belligerent alcoholic that has serious rage issues and has assaulted women. And is a pig. And that's not even, and the truth is, that wasn't even why I didn't think he was qualified. He's not qualified because he's just not qualified. He
and
was
Kavanaugh,
groomed for that job. He's never tried a case. He's never seen the inside of a courtroom. No.
Kavanaugh is on that court for one reason and one reason only. When it comes to the interests of corporate power, he will always vote in their favor. And that's pretty much it.
And I get Tucker justifies asking for her LSAT. The fact of the matter is, has she not given her LSAT? Would she care? I don't, she probably doesn't remember her LSAT. The only reason I remember mine is it was like 1 point above the national average. And I was like, yeah, that's not going to get me anywhere.
You're just me.
But right. So what, like most people don't remember their LSAT scores because it's really not important. That's the thing. Her LSAT score is irrelevant to her qualifications. Him being a belligerent alcoholic rapist, that kind of has some, you know, bearing on his qualifications to me. Just personal preference. Yeah. And I don't care about her LSAT score. And I don't even care if she lied about her LSAT score. I don't care. What are your thoughts? Everything she's done since then has been pretty impressive. So I'm going to go with that. Thoughts?
I'm sending something real quick.
Okay. Peter's incommunicado.
I think that she is absolutely qualified for the court. I think that this whole issue that they're trying to, you know, move on her now with is this whole idea that she is soft on child porn.
That's something that I can tell you for sure has been taken completely out of context. That's like the people that say that Vosh is anti-trans. There is a clip of something that is taken. There is no way that someone like her is soft on child porn.
No.
That's just not possible. So I would need to see exactly why somebody is saying that and exactly what their reasoning is. And I guarantee you it is taken out of context because that's just ridiculous.
Yeah. And again, it just is. But that's really the whole point. I don't know what their goal is. If their goal is to just listen.
Their goal is to be difficult because that's what they do.
Yes. That I agree with. Absolutely. I think that the GOP, you know, they have their playbook. They know what they need to do. They know that they cannot actually prevent this nomination, but they're going to do everything in their capacity to try to make it so. And if God forbid, listen, I don't wish any ill on anybody, but if Clarence Thomas is really sick and he's no longer able to be on the court, I mean, look,
that's another good nomination for, well, look, he was, you know, that was to me was always a travesty.
You know, imagine, could you even imagine if Biden gets two Supreme Court nominees?
It would be good. Yeah. But, you know, the ultimate problem is that all of the federal bench across the country and all the lower courts have been so stacked over the past,
The Supreme Court can only hear so many cases.
Well, that is.
But that's where the significance of this particular seat becomes huge, because it would obviously be a reverse of what happened with Ginsburg. This would be a flip. And so Thomas were to have to step down in the next 3 years, that would, of course, I mean, look, he's 80 years old, for God's sake.
Yeah. People hold on till they're dying.
Look at Ginsburg. She did it too.
I know.
So
she should have retired in Obama's second term.
Absolutely. And so in this case,
we probably wouldn't have a Brett Kavanaugh and an Amy Coney Island.
And one of the biggest things about the GOP is that they will never allow anybody to step down. They'll fight tooth and nail to keep him there. If they have to drag out his car. Yeah, no, I don't think they are.
Can I also say about this person who's being nominated, this woman, that she went to undergrad with a couple of friends of mine. And I think she's a year behind me.
Yeah, she went to Miami?
No, she went to Harvard.
Oh, right.
She went to Harvard undergrad.
Yeah, but she's from Harvard Miami as well.
So. Yeah, she is from Miami, but they know her from college. I don't think anybody deserves anything, but this woman has earned this. Like, with everything that she's done, she has earned this. This is, you know, there are so many cases of nepotism and there are so many cases of political placements and different things that where you see people that didn't earn anything, just like, you know, the aforementioned justices on the Supreme Court. And this is somebody who's really earned this just with everything since, you know, college. That's what I know. So that would be nice. Oh, she was a Palmetto girl. Ha. So she was Palmetto 89.
Yeah.
Okay. I know people from that year. I know Palmetto people from that year.
Oh, those connections and
stuff. Well, for me, though, it probably, unfortunately, I'm loath to say, would not include her because mine's Jewish geography. So the people that I know from Palmetto were people I know from high school in Israel. So, like, for me, it's Jewish geography, which most likely wouldn't include her, but I'm sure that there's mutual friends.
Well, if she gets nominated and if ultimately in the next 3 years, Thomas does have to step down, that changes the whole dynamic of the Supreme Court, because it would basically go back to even. And that's kind of,
what if there were four women on the Supreme Court?
That's not impossible.
That would be so cool.
As long as they,
that's again, like one shy of a coven.
Well, for me, it's all about how are you going to interpret the law? And that is something that conservatives always like to talk about. But you see, the problem with conservatives talking about how we interpret the law is they are trying to interpret it from the perspective of 225 years ago. That's a problem. And you cannot listen. I'm all for I am a fierce supporter of the Constitution, but having a little common sense is also important too. And you know, when they say I'm a constitutional absolutist or
I kind of am. But when you look at it, it isn't there are a lot of things that are not specified, and they're not specified for the reason as to they couldn't have been foreseen. So, you know, you have to look at it in terms of its spirit and what it's meant to be and what the founders intended it to be. And I do believe, with the exception if you get out all of the white male misogyny, because that is definitely slaveholder mentality, the concept of our Bill of Rights and the concept of having three branches of government and what it sets out to do is incredibly brilliant and really had never been done before at that, you know, at that point. So it could be great. That's what I think.
Yeah, I think, well, again, as I said, and I think that this is, you know, the most important thing that people have to remember more than anything else regarding this nomination is that she's going to get it. I would be shocked if she didn't.
Yeah, they'd have to have something.
I think that there's, there is too much that could possibly go wrong for it not to happen. But with that said, we are very, very happy to bring in a gentleman who is making a real difference. And there's no partisanship involved here. This is how can I make the world a better place? And by introducing a concept that we haven't seen very much of, we see things like GoFundMe and all that. But what we do have is something called Twitter philanthropy that Mr. Bill Pulte is really turning heads with and hopefully is inspiring many others to do the same. And hopefully there are some great ideas we can discuss today.
So I just want to say this, because you're going to just introduce it, but I want to say this. So I don't know about this because you guys know I'm not on social media. Stop hitting me.
I am telling you that this is important
Listen
for us to discuss.
I know it is. So I started researching this and I looked up Mr. Pulte. And I have come to the realization, this is what, if I were very, very wealthy, this would be a reason I'd be on social media. This is exactly what I feel like I would be doing. Like, I think this is amazing. So this is somebody that's taking resources and really showing the way as to how we can all be. It isn't just about giving the money. It's about the demonstration. And I think that's amazing. So I'm very pleased.
Without further ado, he is head of Pulte Capital. He is a philanthropist of the best kind. Bill Pulte, welcome to Generation Change.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you for coming on. So please, first and foremost, introduce yourself, people that are obviously, you know, new, that may be new to you, not familiar with what you do, and the impact that you've been having so far, and what your ultimate goal is.
Sure. So we believe that you can use social media to help people. And, you know, so often social media is used to tear down people. And so what we try to do with Twitter philanthropy is help people who are in immediate need or crisis. And so what we do is basically we get on Twitter and we figure out, okay, who's in, you know, real crisis, and we jump right into it, and we either raise money for people or I give money myself. And it's really become a viral thing. And, you know, we have millions and millions of people now who are watching what we're doing from, you know, all across the globe. So it's something we're pretty excited about, and, you know, we're going to keep on doing it.
I think it's amazing. I'm very impressed with this. And I always think, like, if everybody gave what they could, that it would really, it's an amazing thing to inspire. Like, we try to do that here. That's one of the things that we try to do, is sort of inspire people to get involved, give what you can. Some people can give money, some people can give time. And that's the thing. And some people can just help by sharing the information, which is something that, you know, we promote here a lot. So talk about how you first started doing this. Like, where was the first thought that you had, like, this could be like a real good thing?
Well, I put out a tweet saying that I would give away $10,000, and I knew that it would get attention, but I didn't think that it would get as much attention as it did. And it really went viral. And I said, wow, I think I'm onto something. And so, you know, a couple of days later, I started tweeting out again, and then I started raising money for veterans. And it was like, you know, it was almost like magic in a certain way. And so I've just decided to kind of keep it going. And, you know, right now what I'm trying to figure out is how do we do it so it's not dependent on me? Because, you know, obviously I have resources to be able to help people, but how can we create almost like a, and we've done this, but, you know, I would like to have Twitter philanthropy exist without me. And once it exists without me, then we'll really be a success. And so that's where I'm spending a lot of my time these days, is trying to figure out how we can make successful without my involvement being necessary.
Right. Do you ever think, like, as much as this is amazing, that wouldn't it be cool if we lived in a place where we didn't need that?
Of
like
course.
Where people didn't need GoFundMe for healthcare and, you know, these types of things. Like, wouldn't that be nice? Like, it's somewhat, I love it, but then I feel sad that this is even where we are, that this is necessary because we don't have a civilization that takes care of it, like takes care of ourselves.
Of course. Yes. And I think that, you know, for whatever it's worth, I do think that over time it will get better. And, you know, I hesitate to say that because the government is so, you know, we all probably feel the same way about, you know, how people are left out. But, you know, I think with technology being what it is, and me seeing what I see with Twitter philanthropy, whether it's Bitcoin or some of these other technologies, they're so quick, they're so able to get resources to people who wouldn't otherwise have resources. So I think if we can keep using technology, and I think technology has a way that makes us have to use it, you know, we'll continue to lift people out of poverty and out of, you know, extreme situations. I mean, you know, we're helping people who get their eyes blown out from, you know, like there's this one little kid, he got his eyes shot out one night. He was sleeping in his bed. This is a true story. And somebody shot inside of his home. Well, this is by no fault of his own. And so we were able to put up the campaign and we got him a glass eyeball. Obviously we couldn't get him his vision back, which sucked, but we were able to raise them some money. And so, you know, if we didn't have Twitter, if we didn't have this technology, we wouldn't be able to do it. So hopefully over time, you know, it continues to get better and better and more people do it.
One of the things that I've observed in particular when you do the Twitter philanthropy is that people will specifically tell you that I need $150 to cover this or something like that. I think that, and this is coming from, you know, somebody who's had all different walks of political life and observations. But one thing in particular that people who are politically conservative always like to say is, I don't want my money getting funneled through any type of organization. If there is something specific that somebody needs help with, I am more than happy to give it. I just want to know exactly what it's for. I want to know that this is going to help them. They have a car payment that they need. They are trying to fill their tuition. I don't want some nonprofit, you know, basically becoming this middleman that's siphoning money away from where it really belongs. Was that in any way the impetus of for you making this decision to basically say, I want to help people and I don't want a whole bunch of red tape in the way for me getting that help to them immediately?
Yeah, not so much the political discussion in terms of, you know, the I didn't really think of it through a political prism as much as I just thought, like, to your point about red tape, you know, we got to get rid of this red tape and, you know, enough of this BS. And, you know, when you look at, and I love big charities, okay, my family has a big charity, but when you have big charities or when you have these balls or these galas, as I call it, and you spend all this money on all of this overhead, let's say, you know, that is all money and resources that might be able to go to people directly. And so, yes, that was a very motivating part for me, was to get rid of the red tape. And we try to do that every day. I mean, you know, most of the time it's me, it's, you know, it's 100%, it's basically 100% me. And so when I see something, it's just, okay, should we do that? Boom. And then it's instantaneous. It's right away. So there's no diddle dallying around or anything like that. And, you know, if I added any bureaucracy to your point about politics, it would materially slow things down, I think.
Yeah, for sure. But, you know, one of the things that we see with nonprofits, and it's unfortunate, is especially the ones down here in South Florida, is organizations that start out, let's say, really grassroots, really well-intended, we're going to serve, we're building community, and then they get bigger and bigger, and then they get co-opted. And now the next thing you know is they're really no longer doing anything. They're just existing to serve their payroll. Like, they're just existing to be this nonprofit. But, and I've seen it down here with several organizations. We've seen it. And I mean, that to me is the biggest problem when I look at big nonprofits. Is are they actually serving, or are they just existing to make payroll?
Well, I think that's wise, and I agree. And unfortunately, or fortunately, or whatever, I don't think it's so fortunate. You know, human nature, I think, is always going to be greedy, and human nature is always going to want power. And so, you know, there was an old saying, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And what you're describing in terms of how things start and then how things end, you know, that's why even with the any money that's sent to me or any money that I would ever make off of social media in terms of profit, I would just give back because, you know, the problem is once you try to start benefiting from it personally, financially, you know, in terms of profits and pocketing them and these type of things, it can really corrupt the thing. So, you know, I make sure that at least I do that anyway.
Yeah. But you're also just you. So that's you're able to just be you without having to have an organization that's, you know, with a board and all of that stuff. You're just you. That's freedom. I mean, that's really cool. I wish I could do that. I want to be you, Bill. That's what I want.
You know, I don't really subscribe to the idea that you need money in order to do it. I mean, even just the fact that you're having me on and spreading this whole thing. I mean, it could be, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you could be reaching people who could donate to the kid who got his eyes blown out with the gunshot. Right. So, you know, it's not one of those things where you need to be rich. I mean, yeah, to, you know, do the amount of money that I'm giving away in those things. Yes, of course. But you know, if everybody does their part, that's the power of this team is, you know, when we put something up, it's not Bill Pulte. And I sometimes make a point. I say, I'm not donating to this one because I want the team to handle it. And if everybody chips in $1, $5, $10, you can take care of a lot of people, especially when you're dealing with, you know, the internet and we can reach so many people.
Yeah, I think it's really important. And it isn't just about the money. It's about building community because it's sort of like when we're running a grassroots campaign, the power in having a bunch of $1 and $5 donations is really massive psychologically. There is this huge sort of like emotional.
I'm a part of this. I can make a difference.
Yeah. And I think, well, yes. And it builds a sense of community and it starts for people to start thinking of the collective, which I always think is a huge problem in this country is we don't often think of the collective. And I like that this is encouraging people to think of the collective and they do. And that's what those small dollar donations, like to me, that's what that's symbolic of, which is really cool.
I agree 100%. Couldn't have said it.
Who are some, you don't even have to name anybody. This is obviously more, I think it's always in a way to be a little bit more anonymous about it. I'm sure you've been in rooms with some of the most influential and financially powerful people. Have you found that they are responding in kind? I'm sure there are some who are like, ah, the heck with that. But are there those who you've spoken to when they're like, you know what, I really should be making a better effort to, you know, to give back. Have you found that that's been, it's been pretty receptive what you've been doing amongst those that have ways and means of really making a difference?
Yeah. I mean, I would actually say that the wealthiest people that I know, I have not met one extremely wealthy person who does not love Twitter philanthropy. On the other hand, I've met other rich people who, you know, don't like it, but I would say that they don't like it for maybe the wrong reasons. I don't know if that makes sense, but maybe it's the people because they're very, very wealthy. I'm talking billionaires. You know, maybe it's because they're very wealthy that they don't, you know, want to make money off of the traditional charity, right? That's one of the things is there are some rich people who make money off of charity, right? This is a big problem.
Oh, Bill and the Gates.
And, oh, yeah. And you know, to be honest with you, I don't know too much about, you know, how billionaires are using charity to put money in their own pocket. But every billionaire that I've interacted with on this subject thinks that it's forward thinking, that it's cutting edge. And again, maybe that's just the, you know, the ultra net worth people that I've spoken to, but, yeah, we just got to make sure charity isn't abused, you know, because, you know, there's so many people that need help.
Yeah.
Couldn't have said it better. And we are as a country right now, and we're very divided. And obviously we have a lot of, structural issues, economically, environmentally, all those things add up. What are some of the things that you personally would like to see happen in terms of, and again, without having to really get political, just what are some of the things that you would like to see
policy.
You know, policy-wise that you think would be very beneficial for this country? Obviously, being with Twitter Philanthropy, Andrew Yang is a friend. He's been on the show. You know, obviously, his idea behind UBI was something that really took off with millions of people, quite frankly, which could definitely have a tremendous impact financially for many. What are some of the things you personally would like to see that you think would have a greater impact or as great an impact?
It's a great question. I mean, this is kind of an outside of the box idea, but I firmly believe it. And you asked, so I'll answer it. Is I think that if the U.S. government was to buy a lot of Bitcoin and make it so the Bitcoin would help keep politicians honest, for example. Because it's math, you know, there's only so many coins. I think that, frankly, Bitcoin will solve a lot of poverty. And I know that that sounds crazy. Maybe it doesn't. But it already is in third world countries. And so you say, okay, well, what the hell does that have to do with the United States? Well, what it has to do with the United States is that I believe over the next 10, 20, 30, 50 years, that the people who are invested in Bitcoin, in particular, who want to solve many of the issues, whether it's medical, education, budgetary issues, et cetera, these people, they are going to really lift their people, in my opinion, out of poverty. So, you know, I don't understand why the U.S. Treasury, for example, hasn't bought Bitcoin. Frankly, I think that the United States should do it. And I think it's only going to appreciate over time. And I think that, you know, you'd be able to use the Bitcoin. And I know it's kind of an out there idea. You probably weren't expecting me to say this, but, you know, you could use the Bitcoin to get it to people who don't have bank accounts. I mean, did you guys know that in some cases there's 10 to 20% of Americans, for example, if we're just talking about America, which, you know, we do Twitter Philanthropy internationally, but if we're just talking about America, 10 to 20% in some cases, even higher, of Americans don't even have bank accounts. And so they're not able to get financial resources even from charities if they wanted to, right? They have to go to, you know, like the 1930s, they have to go to a food kitchen and those type of things. So I guess what I'm saying is call it Bitcoin, call it whatever. We need to embrace this technology. And, you know, obviously I think that the government, you know, they take their good old time and whether it's Bitcoin or otherwise, if they could embrace the technology quicker, I think we'd get a lot further off and a lot less people would be hurting, frankly.
Excellent points, Bill. Obviously, the biggest concern with Bitcoin, probably more than anything else, is the environmental impact that it has in terms of the mining. But that's something, obviously, that can be addressed. It's not something that can't be addressed. I was certainly...
No, it's something that needs to get light shown on, not just that, but it needs to get shown on some of these other industries. I mean, I recently read about the banking industry. You know, how much energy they're using. I mean, they may even, I don't know, you know, I'm not close to it, but they may be actually using more energy than Bitcoin. So there are definitely things that can be improved, 100%.
What I found the most interesting, and it doesn't matter because of, yeah, and it's definitely a bipartisan effort. Obviously, we've seen what Senator Warren has done, but there are others who are trying to crush Bitcoin. And I find that very, very interesting. Anytime Capitol Hill feels the need to try to take some type of financial benefit away from people who don't want to deal with the central banking system, I'm even more inclined to say, that's probably a good idea. That's probably something we should be looking into. And we've seen a lot of people. We saw, obviously, what happened with GameStop and people really taking, you know, just everyday people with very little means having an opportunity to make a little for themselves. And so the second it gets outside that central banking component, I'm sure you would agree as well that it's people have to have options. And the fact that you're even suggesting that really speaks volumes because people are hurting. And if this is if crypto is a pathway forward for them to have some semblance of financial security, then you have to be for it. I can't see why you wouldn't be.
I mean, even look, if you restrict the coins, which they do, if you make it easy to access, meaning people without bank accounts can get it, even if you take those two things off the table, the fact that, you know, as far as I understand it, Bitcoin, you know, is lifting some of these nations out of poverty and, you know, is going to hopefully appreciate over time. I mean, you know, that may do more for certainly underdeveloped countries. And, you know, what about the inner city of Chicago, where we've done a lot of work, or the inner city of Detroit? I mean, some of these people can't access jobs. And so I think that, you know, it could be, you know, I think it can be very helpful. So,
friend of the show, Guy Guyberson, talks about a post office bank. You know, one of the things
I support
office banks as well. But one thing I can tell you, obviously, us being here in South Florida, you know, our community banks, they're gone.
We don't have any.
They don't exist anymore. They've been completely taken over by investment banks like Chase and TD and all that.
And the credit, everything else. There's no, you know, there's very little fees with Bitcoin, for example.
Yeah.
Right.
And I would think that in itself is also something. We talk a lot about the issues of education in this country. We have to also rethink how people are learning about, you know, finances and how to properly, you know, even manage a checkbook and stuff like that.
Wait a second, but how will the payday lenders be able to like gouge us?
Oh, damn, you know.
Those people in those vulnerable neighborhoods, they have much better access to payday lenders than they do to banking.
It's one of the most devastating things I've ever seen. And in the state of Florida, I think
we have a serious problem.
It's between 400% and 600% interest that they make. You know, we've heard people say,
but no regulation whatsoever.
It's expensive to be poor. You know, that's also something that people say, is that if, you know, I may be, you know, stuck where I am, but trust me, as you know, as hard as one fights to get out of it, it's like, you know, you're trying to climb over this hill that you can never see over because there's always something else that, you know, keeps piling on top. And that I think is a huge part of it as well. Would you agree?
I would.
So what is, I think we read that, the goal ultimately with this initiative as it stands right now, I think you've given away about 300,000. Is that correct?
I've given well over a million, way higher than a million, but we're going through a accounting review of it right now. And, you know, it's kind of crazy, but given how big this thing has gotten, before I say, oh, this is how much we've done, I got to make sure it's 100% perfect. Because there's a lot of, interesting people out there who it's crazy. We're giving away money, but people somehow find a way to hate on it. You can't make this.
We deal with that all the time. That's why I had to get off of the social media. The people are so mean and toxic. Like, I'm sitting here, I get nothing from doing this. Nothing. I mean, I enjoy it and it's fun and I get to talk to cool people, but like, I don't personally gain anything from this. And tell people and the haters, it's crazy. I don't understand it. I'm just so like, aren't there people with a lot more power than me to hate on? Like, why? Like, I have very little control over very few things. Like,
what would you say are some of the most common pushbacks or you know, dissents regarding what you're doing? I even if there was something negative that you could even find from it, I can't. I think what you're doing is an absolute good. And I think that people really, I think there's just a lot of jealousy and envy out there. I think that that's a big part of it. But what would you say has been your experience as to why people would say, oh, that's a
why
bad
do you
idea.
Have haters?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that's the majority of the issue if you really look deep down. But, you know, they give other reasons like, oh, you should be giving more money. You know, you should be giving more money individually to different people. You know, it's funny. They often too say, oh, well, you know, that person turned out to not be, you know, worthy of the money or whatever. First of all, it's my money. Second of all is when you go to give money away, either through charity or otherwise, you know, there's always going to be, you know, the chance of fraud or scams or, you know, giving money to people maybe who aren't, you know, exactly representing everything that they say that they are.
Yeah.
And so, you know, to me, it's kind of like, okay, if 10% of the people, which I think that's way higher than it actually is, if 10% of the people are not, you know, deserving, and, you know, I don't even like that word, I'll take those odds any day because then I can help 90% of people, you know? So in your point of social media, I just think it's one of those things you just gotta power through it. So
that's what he's for.
Yeah.
I'm lucky.
Content. And when we put anything that's out there, you know, we talked about this a long time ago, especially on Twitter, where it connects everybody all over the world. It can reach the most amount of people, but it can also reach the most amount of hate. And when rage mob gets involved and all of that stuff, and the algorithm feeds that environment because it's what gets the most comments and the shares and all that stuff.
Oh yeah, it's drama.
Yeah.
Barry?
What?
Are you two married or what's your
relationship?
We're business married, if you want to call it that.
That
would count. But yeah, no, it was very tough. You know, Jen, I think we have good chemistry. We do a good job. Jen ran for Congress in a grassroots campaign in 2020 against Debbie Wasserman Schultz. It was a very unique experience. And, you know, we learned a lot about, you know, what goes into running for office when you're not part of the machine, if you will, when you're part of the club. And so you learn about the people who are very committed to the cause. And then you can even see the people who are like, why do you want to mess up the status quo? Why do you want to get in the middle of this? And it becomes this whole, we as Americans, we don't take to change, even change that looks really, really good. There's always going to be those who say, why is Bill giving away all of this money? What is he getting out of this, Jen? He's got to be getting something. He's not doing this because he's a good guy.
And then there's you're never doing enough. Like, no matter what you do, it's not enough. And somehow if you're giving, you should also take a vow of poverty and you should live as close to homeless as you can while giving everything you have away to others. And it's interesting because we had Nina Turner was in town here not that long ago. And one of the things she said that she gets now is that she's not struggling now. And nobody ever says you have to struggle in order to help other people. Like there's no vow of poverty here, folks. It's all good. And I think people should appreciate and what you're doing, quite honestly, besides giving money, the inspiring, the chain of events, it's like the phone tree. That is infinitely more important. People don't understand the size of the platform is way more important than the amount of dollars that this man gives away.
And Bill, I do want you to have the opportunity to share your sentiments. One of the things on the progressive side of politics that we've noticed, and there's been a lot of nihilism that has obviously taken shape over the past several months, even probably the past few years. This idea that just because you are a wealthy individual, that automatically makes you a bad person.
Right.
I do not understand that mindset, this idea that people can't have money or that they shouldn't have it or that it's not justified. I think that is a very, very bad way to play things because it ultimately negates any positive change that could possibly come of it. What are your thoughts on this whole idea that people with money, by definition, cannot be good people?
Well, what I try to do is just lead by example. So, you know, it's kind of one of those things where, you know, I could keep it to myself and give privately and, you know, sit in a room and complain about it all day long, or I could just get on Twitter and help people. And so I've elected to at least, you know, get out there and do it. You know, I think for a variety of reasons, other quote unquote rich people don't want to give money or don't want to directly help people. But, you know, going down that rabbit hole, at least for me, has never proven to be particularly helpful mentally. And so what I mean by that is, you know, in terms of keeping a positive attitude, getting shit done, you know, excuse my language.
Just be yourself, sir.
We're well past that this show. Go ahead.
You know, just getting shit done. You know, I just try to just get shit done. That's what I just try to do.
I appreciate that so much.
Yeah.
We need more people doing this. That's the truth. We need more people doing this, setting that example and spreading that message. I think that's way more important.
I think one of the best places to sort of wind down this conversation is what you would say, the short-term goal and the long-term goal of what you're doing right now. Because like you said, can't do this forever, obviously. But at the same time, you are inspiring other people. So what are some of the things that you would like to see maybe within, I don't know, the next 6 months to a year? And then ultimately the long-term goal of what this initiative is all about.
Well, right now we're just trying to work on, and it's a great question. Right now we're just trying to help as many people as we can. So it's like, you know, we wake up in the morning, we see who's hurting, we see who's in the most need, boom, boom, boom. We try to help them out, try to put up their fundraiser, try to get them resources. So that's it on the short-term basis. And we do that through teamgiving.com, which is an amazing portal where people can go and fill out and sign up to, you know, get assistance. And then we also do, you know, we're also thinking about long-term, how can we get it so we can get, you know, God willing, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of people on a recurring basis to really go back to the well and help people day in and day out. And that, I think, is the threshold issue. I don't think it needs to be figured out today or tomorrow or this year or next year, maybe not even this decade. But over the coming decades, you know, I'm 33 years old. So hopefully by the time, hopefully we got a lot longer to go, and hopefully over the coming decades, we'll be able to, you know, run this thing down. But that's the ultimate goal, is to have it be, able to run without me. That's how I know we have won. Cause it's not about me. It's not about Bill Pulte. Never has been. That's not the way that I started it. And that's definitely not the way I want to end it.
Yeah. There is no question that this is something that our goal, having you on here today, and the hundreds, potentially thousands of people who will see this, please spread the word, because there isn't a lot. When Jen and I talked about what was the impetus to having you on our podcast, and I said, you're inspiring hope. Like, we need hope these days. There's so much negativity. There's so much nihilism. We need to show people that there is possible, that there is something possible here that could ultimately turn this around. And we often say it just takes one. It takes that one person to say, you know what, I'm going to go out and I'm going to make a difference. And then the next thing you know, as I'm sure you've seen, somebody with a lot of ways and means says, I'm going to make a difference too. I'm going to do what I have to do in order to help turn this around. And, you know, we can't be more appreciative of your efforts, Jen.
Yeah, thoughts? No, for sure. And, I just want to say, at your old age of 33, you've accomplished quite a bit, and and anything that we can do or I can do, like if you have any ideas or you think this would be something that would be cool, and you need any sort of outpost in South Florida, we're very happy to help.
I'll let you know when we do something there, and I appreciate you saying that very much. I would say too, we could use you on social media, so you should just emotionally plow through it and just do.
I am via him. Like, we represent our brand.
I understand, but you can't replace the individual.
I know. That's true. That's true.
Bill Pulte, you are a pleasure and you are a treasure. I think that's the best way that I can say it. What's the website? Where can people follow your work? Please. Obviously, we have teamgiving.com. Is there anything else that you're working on that you would like to share with people? When's the book coming out, I guess, is the next question.
I have a book that my grandpa and I put together, basically, that outlines, you know, a lot of our business success and how we work together, because, you know, business gets a bad name. But I think if done right, you can use a lot of those resources from business to do that. So people can get their free copy at pulte.org/ebook. So
pulte.org.
And I like that he said his grandpa.
Ebook. Yeah, that's awesome. Hey, guys, I mean, I'm sure there is a lot to learn from just reading this book regarding not just philanthropy, but also self-sustainability. It's obviously something that we all need a little bit of these days. Will you come back on the podcast again at some point in the near future?
Yep, you got it. Especially if you guys stay on social media.
We are.
We ain't going anywhere. Listen, as much as what we have learned, and Jen, if there's, there have been circumstances where you have met people where they have said what an impact you've made for them.
Yeah.
You know, you can deal with 100. There's everyone who believes it's this idea that you only get, it's that one negative that stands out. Actually, I don't look at it that way. You could have 100 negative comments come your way, but that one comment that says, you really made a difference in my life, that can carry you 10 times further than any negative comment ever could. That is why we do what we do, because somebody has to do it. It is a hell of a responsibility, as you know, to be a public figure. It is, your life is never going to be the same again. And you welcomed that. And not everybody does. There are people who, you know, it's like becoming a movie star or rock star or anything like that.
I am not a public figure.
No, but you are whether you want to be or not. And that is the responsibility that I don't think a lot of people really understand. They want it when it's good, but not when it's bad. You are willing to take it in all directions, as is Jen. It really goes without saying that what you are doing is right. And we certainly hope that more people will be inspired to do it. And we look forward to talking with you again in the near future.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you.
Absolutely, Bill.
Have a good day.
Take care, brother.
He was lovely.
What can you say? And for everybody,
I agree. I was digging the hair.
And for, well, there were people in the chat who obviously said that.
Well, that's what I was. That's what I'm saying. I agree. I was digging the hair.
If you guys like what we
I
do,
I don't like that you were hitting.
I didn't want you to say too much.
I don't. But people know who I am. I am who I am. That's how it is.
If you guys like what we have to do, if you like our if you like our message, if you like what we're fighting for, we do not take a salary. This goes, Jen, if you will.
All the money from Generational Change goes directly into GenCore, which is our nonprofit. We're a 501c4, not a C3, so it's not tax deductible because we do political endorsements as well.
But non-corporate candidates only.
But the bulk of our money goes towards serving. It goes towards service. It goes towards homeless care packs that we donate to Community Garden. Like, just it goes towards different things that we can help in our community. And, you know, if there was something national, I would donate to that too. You know, I mean, it could be anything, but it's service money.
And if there is any place in the country that really needs a kick in the bum regarding how to be more considerate towards fellow man, woman, and child, it is definitely the state of Florida.
It's so bad here. Like, I'm listening to Melissa talking about how the town has come together mm-hmm. and decided that they want to figure out the best way to do this.
John,
like that is the furthest thing from what happens here.
John Harris, you have been absolutely great in the chat, by the way.
And by the way, is that really you in that photo? Because you cutie patootie. to me, that looks like someone who's using the guy who comes out of the picture frame.
But think about that, guys. Think about that as a charity. That was the biggest I received from the community was giving free community workouts. That is charity. And that makes a real impact on people's lives.
Yes.
And that didn't require money. And to me, that really means everything. Brandy, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, guys, Queen Brandy.
We certainly hope that you guys will check out the rest of our channel.
Yes.
It obviously goes without saying that what we try to do here is turn politics into service.
Yeah.
That is our mission. We hope you've enjoyed it.
What do we have coming up?
What do we have
coming up? We always have to at least say what's coming up.
On Monday, which is going to be, Jen's having a little sabbatical the next few days, which will be
fun
for her.
I'm going to visit my son at college. Mm-hmm. He's in New York. So I'm
on Monday, which is our next podcast that we have fully scheduled, we are having two wonderful guests. The first, some of you may know, who lives off the grid and is popular on social media, is Allison Morrow. She is somebody who used to work in corporate media and now doesn't want anything to do with that anymore.
And is living off the grid-ish.
Eva, thank you for joining us. The stream just ended, and we certainly hope that you'll check it out. It will drop live on our channel, Generational Change, in a moment. So make sure that you guys subscribe, click the bell, hit the like button.
I know he does that a lot where he stops mid-sentence and goes into something else. So Allison Morrow will be here on Monday talking about like off-the-grid living, quite honestly.
Well, I have you to pick me up. So there you go.
Somebody has to get living. Yes, I get that. And then
a very important topic, which almost in many ways is relatable to what we just talked about today, which is charity. That is very important, which Bill Pulte is doing.
And I thought what you were talking about was that it's very relatable to what we're talking about with goats.
Maybe so, but with that said,
goats.
And okay. With that said,
so on Monday after Allison, we'll be speaking with Zach Wright, mm-hmm. Who is a teacher, an educator, and an author. And we're going to be talking about things we can do to help the education injustice problem in this country. And it is massive, people. And it's not something that we've talked about on here. Not in and of itself. Like it's always been part of other conversations. So we're going to talk about education injustice on Monday.
Sounds good.
And then that's it. And we're still working on 420 because I'm trying to get the original Waldos, or at least one of the original Waldos.
We want to get an all-star cast for 420, guys, just so you know. Yes. But of course, the number one we're trying to get right now would be Jim Belushi, who is doing an amazing job with his cannabis farm. So we definitely want to get him on and hopefully some other.
I want Willie Nelson.
Somebody can get Snoop Dogg and Willie Nelson. That would be the two ultimate gets for the podcast.
Let me tell you. Like as a cannabis user for my entire life, basically, the idea of smoking with Snoop and Willie to me is like, that's like the best thing ever.
All right,
like,
guys, you have the message.
Anything
you have
better.
The message now. Now you know exactly what you need to do to help us out.
I'm just saying.
Please check out our channel.
And even if it was virtual, still would be amazing.
Fair enough. But we hope you enjoyed it. And we look forward to seeing more of you on our streams going forward. We ensure we will have Bill back again. And Jen just can't help herself. But we appreciate you guys. Thank you so much.
Oh, and people who this is the first time we're normally evening live stream.
at 8 p.m. on Mondays and Wednesdays. Yes. So Wednesday, yes, today we always do it, but we will make exceptions. We made an exception for Bill, but we really made an exception for Melissa Jukin, who came all the way from Ireland to be on our show.
It's hard for people in that side of the world to come on our night.
That's true. We appreciate you. Hope you guys have a great rest of your day. We'll see.
Thanks for watching. If you want to support our mission to transform politics into service, please like this video, subscribe, follow us on social media, and consider joining our Patreon, where you'll get early access to our interviews as well as other exclusive content. Links are in the description. Peace out.